Welcome to the very first edition of My Life in Football for the Southern League in association with Square Media and Repos Retail Solutions. In our first episode, we talked to the one and only Mr. Tony Gow, the living legend. We talked to him from his start at West Ham all the way through from Fulham and to his days at Wharton Casuals. Really hope you enjoy all these interviews in the coming weeks. But of course, first week, the one and only, the living legend, Mr. Tony Gow. To the first in our new series for the Southern League, and of course it's called My Life in Football, where we'll talk to people, that we talk to your players, managers, supporters, and of course heroes as well in the Southern League. And of course joining me every week will be Steve Whitney, of course. And Steve, well, welcome to the show. And today, and we said about heroes, well, one of my heroes and one of the nicest people I think I've ever met, not just in football, but personally, in the one and only Mr. Tony Gow. So welcome, Tony.
Oh, cheers, Dave. Cheers, Steve. What a lovely intro and all. Thank you, mate. Shall we finish there? We can't get any better.
So, Tony, I mean, we've spoken loads of times before, but I mean, with the sort of name of the show, you know, My Life in Football, I mean, where did sort of football all start for you?
Oh, blimey. Here we go, mate. How long have you got? An hour, isn't it? So basically started at school playing at, and the Cubs. Remember the old Cub Scouts when you was in them? So I was centre forward for the Cub Scouts. The 60th we were, the 60th. They was the numbers of the Cubs, wasn't it? So I held the goal scoring record for the Cubs, scoring 10 goals in one game, actually. But then it wasn't till I started, I had a trial with Fulham at 11. That's what you used to do rather than being recognised. My dad took me down there. My dad was a black taxi driver in London. And the guy who was sort of holding the trials for Fulham was also a taxi driver, but a coach at Fulham. So he knew him. So went down there. They liked the look of me. And to be honest, I was training with them for a couple of years and they didn't start taking notice till I started making representative honours, really, because I was just one of a load of kids training. So I was, I was sort of for the district, as a school team, first of all, West London, Middlesex, Inner London, London, England, Southern England. And then all of a sudden, everybody wants to have a bit of you. But I loved it at Fulham and I stayed there. And that's where I signed apprentice forms.
Were you still playing centre-forward then, Tony?
No, I dropped back by then, Steve. I was playing right back at representative football and a bit of midfield. And then at Fulham, that's when they put me in the back four. So, you know, I was lucky. I weren't lucky. I was good, actually. But it was like lucky and good. But at 16, I was called out of school to play for the reserves. No, 15. I was 15 and played for the reserves. 16, I was in the first team at Fulham. And 18, I was captain of the first team. So it was quite a steep rise, but I was very lucky. I had a manager that really believed in me called Bobby Campbell, who I'm eternally grateful to. Mm.
How, you know, with this sort of like going for trials, as you said, it's a, you know, that sort of side of it's a lot different these days. But I mean, how did the parents feel? You know, still a really young lad and sort of going into that sort of scenario of a professional club going into their youth system. I mean, was it a little bit like these days where you've got a situation where some of the parents feel a little bit agitated, shall we say, whether or not, and you see some of the players go into clubs at a young age and then they get dropped at a young age and stuff like that. Was there sort of any anxiety, that sort of side of it from yourself or maybe from your parents at that sort of early age?
No, I never really got dropped, Dave. I was lucky enough. I was always good enough, so to speak. And my dad, as I said, was a taxi driver. So I would make my way to training, wherever it was, at Putney, Elliot School in Putney, at the end of Putney Hill, or when it was in the summer, we used to train at where Wimbledon train now, at Richardson Evans, the KLG, and that was also a train and a bus ride away. And then my dad would turn up to training every single session, watch me train, and then he would drive me home in a cab. And that lasted all my football career. My dad never missed a match, honestly. Never missed. I was so, so lucky. I saw so many talented kids that didn't really have the backing of parents. And they may, it may have been what might have been for them. Do you know what I mean? But I never suffered with backing. Not my parents weren't loaded with money, but they gave me more than that. They gave me my time. Even my mum, she hardly ever missed a game either. She'd give some linesmen some grief on the line. I'll tell you, she used to stand behind the linesman. Say, that weren't offside. What are you doing? Silly old git. loved them being there.
Before we go on to your sort of further career, do you feel that the system now where clubs take academy kids at six, whatever, is better than it used to be? I mean, I'm the same era as you, and I, like yourself, I was spotted, inverted commas, and then went to trials, etc. So I didn't go through academy systems or whatever like yourself. Do you think the system is better now or not? The reason I ask is that I get lads now of 17, 18, 19 years of age. And to be honest, they're knackered by the time I get them. They've been playing for 10, 12 years.
Yeah, I agree with, it was far easier then for us to play on the streets. So yeah. I would be what you call a street footballer, like Danny.
Absolutely.
Down the yard, or we used to call it in the cage. There was a concrete cage on our estate, and you were playing with older kids. You'd be playing off the walls, you know, one twos off the walls. And then we used to play, you know, if it touches the walls, you had to roll it back in. We had organised leagues, just guys in the housing estates. And I was playing with kids older than myself. Now it's all structured, and they have to write down everything they do within a session. You know, I know this from my son who'd done academy training at Millwall, and he said, like, Dad, it drives you mad. You just have to log everything on an iPad or a laptop about what they've done in training. Whereas we was more natural, I would say. So you would find that there'd be a lot better footballers. And I do a lot, you know, I've been doing commentary for the last 20 years. I think footballers were more talented then because they were street footballers. Mm. And we were hardened street footballers as well. So the kids now, like you were saying, Steve, I think it's too young, six, seven, eight. No, just enjoy yourself. Go and play Sunday football. Go and play down the yard. But there's not really that type of people about now that organise that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And with all the safe health and safety stuff and everything, you know, it's a changing world, isn't it? So they've just evolved with the times, the football clubs. And they've got them doing all these organised things. But sometimes I think you can be coached too much.
Yeah.
You know, people don't run with the ball now. Always in my days, there was great dribblers of the ball, wide players, wingers, you know, even central midfield players, Oddle, Waddle, you know, Alan Devonshire, Peter Barnes, you know, everyone. You very rarely get people that run with the ball now. It's all pass. Right. It kind of gets coached out the kids, which is a little bit, you know, and then when you go and watch a game, it's a little bit sterile. You know, when there's, you go and watch a Premier League game like I do, and there's 20 passes from the kickoff before someone engages someone and there's a tackle.
Well, as soon as the ball kicks off, I turned last night's game off, Man City game, because it was just pass, sideways, backwards. There was nothing in the action areas.
Well, it was just a case of attack against defence, wasn't it? You know, Palace sitting back in their shape. Yeah, it's good tactically, but what it is so much of the football now is, because there's a lot of analysis, sometimes you get paralysis by analysis, and people are afraid to make a mistake because on a Monday morning they got to sit there and answer to that mistake, you know. Whereas we were, to a certain extent, we were worried about how we played, not how the opposition played, but how we played. I think that made football a lot better then, but now it's, how can we stop the opposition? How can I stop that individual opponent against me? So if I was playing against Dave on Saturday and we were both Premier League players, he'd know what I'd eat that morning. You know what I mean? And where I've been the night before, and, you know, how I jink on my right-hand side, how I don't go to my left-hand side, and And in the, you know, that after 55 minutes he starts lagging or something like that. It's all about stopping the opponent rather than being creative, I think. I feel.
I think how good we could have been on the pitches they have now.
Well, that's what I argue against. You're exactly right there, Steve, because, you know, lighter footballs, lighter equipment, football boots, the pitches are like bowling greens. You can't look down at a pitch now and say it bobbled. No yeah. chance. You know, if you've yeah. mucked it up, you've mucked it up. Yeah. Not the ball's been bobbling. And the players that I play with the rules now, where you can't really, you know, kick anyone or, you know, the first tackle's free, so to speak. You get yellow carded straight away if you whack someone. Well, the players, the ball players that I played with, and oh, they'd be absolutely thriving. You'd be drooling watching them. Georgie Best, you know, I played with Georgie Best. What would Georgie Best be like now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Georgie Best could play now, but I don't think Ronaldo could have played then, that's for sure.
No. Well, Tom, you made your debut at 16 in the now defunct Anglo-Scottish Cup against one of my favourite teams in Leighton Orient. But I suppose I know the answer to this question because you've told me before, but I mean, you was actually drafted into the team that day to replace a certain player, weren't you?
Yeah, Bobby Moore. He was away in America. He was playing, as they did then, they played in the summer. So he was out there playing with Pele, Beckham Barr and Chinaglia and, you know, like New York Cosmos and LA Aztecs and all that. So, yeah, that's what gave me my opportunity against you're right, Dave, Leighton Orient, which had a certain Laurie Cunningham in the side that day. Remember, I don't know if you boys remember Laurie Cunningham, but
yeah,
what a player he was. Yeah, he went on to play for Real Madrid after West Bromwich Albion and sadly had an early death with Laurie, but what a player he was. Yeah, my debut was against Laurie Cunningham in their team.
What was that like, finding out you was going to get to, you know, to sort of play your first game? I mean, that was a young 16-year-old Tony Gale feeling sort of maybe, I'm playing against Leighton Orient, Laurie Cunningham, you know. I mean, how did that sort of make you feel?
Well, I had a little bit of nerves, but I never really suffered with nerves when I was playing because all you could feel was like, give it your best shot, and if that ain't enough, then so be it. But I didn't really suffer with nerves. But I just remember feeling nervous for all my family that were going because I think I had the whole of the cab driving nation down at Leighton Orient that day because, you know, being a son of a London cab driver, you know, everybody was down there like the old man would be, oh, he's making his debut, you know, blah, blah, blah. How many tickets do I need? I need about 100 tickets, boss. No, well, all you could get was four, wasn't it? The rest had to pay. But I didn't really want to let anybody else down. Not myself. I didn't really want to let anyone else down. And, you know, it's difficult to explain when you make your debut. You're not just proud. Well, you're proud for yourself. But for the people that have invested time in you, like your parents, that was the pride thing for me.
I mean, that first season, it says here that you had 38 league appearances and 8 goals.
Yeah, I know. I only got 24 in my career. But the 8 goals, just to explain that, is because I played in midfield for some of that. And that was a great experience as well. Played in the midfield 3 with Richard Money, John Margerison, Terry Bullivant, who moved on as well. And, of course, Georgie Best was still about. And I think I played with Bestie about 8 times. That was a pleasure, obviously a dream.
You had Rodney Marsh as well, didn't you, in the side then?
Yeah, Marshy. I didn't play with Marshy, actually, Steve, because I was his boot boy, him and Bestie and Bobby Moore. But I played one game with Moro, but not with Marshy. But Marshy was a character. Still speak to Rodney now. He's got a radio show in America. And he rings me up now and again just to do the punditry thing for him. Yeah, I owe him that. I'll do it for nothing. So as he keeps pointing out to me, all the advice he give me.
But you had seasons in there, and then you came up with a certain manager called Malcolm McDonald.
Yeah, after Bobby. Bobby got the sack. He moved on. Malcolm was good for me because we'd had an era of older players, and it all evolved. I was captain. Then the captaincy was taken off me by the manager who came in temporarily, who was our physio. But a pal of mine got the captaincy, Les Strong, so it didn't really matter anyway. And then Malcolm McDonald come in and we went all to younger players and got rid of all the older players. Now, bearing in mind, I was only 22, but I'd had about 200 games by then anyway, you know, so I was one of the senior players. But in a team of young players like Paul Parker, Ray Houghton, Dean Coney, Gordon Davis, Robert Wilson, Ray Lewington, who's was went on to be England coach. I saw him at the weekend, actually, for Watford with Roy. But all those players coming again. So it was. I went through sort of three eras at Fulham in 8 years. A real high turnover of players. Some experienced players, which I learnt loads off. And then all the youngsters coming through. Terry Bullivan, Richard Money, John Margerison, Brian Greenaway. All these things come to mind because these players all had good long football careers. So they were top players, you know. Although it was in the second division. We did get relegated. We went down to the third, but we bounced straight back. So by doing that, I think I was when all the grounds were the old grounds, there was only six grounds that I hadn't played at because I was in the first, second and third division. I played in more or less at all the grounds, you know, some right Carses and the top grounds as well, you know. So it was a great, great thrill, you know.
I mean, it says here, I mean, again, you don't have to comment on it, but it says here, a dispute with Malcolm and McDonald saw Gal suspended shortly after the start of the season.
No, he didn't suspend me, he dropped me. He called me in the office. He gave me the biggest kick up the arse that I deserved it. Looking back, it was the best thing that happened to me at my career at Fulham because having come into the team at 16 and then Malcolm arrives when I was like 22 for my last couple of years at Fulham because I left at 24. He got me in the office and sort of said, you know, like, you're a lot better. We should be getting more out of your ability. Kind of telling me that when I'm looking back on it now, you know, you're a young man who's got his feet under the table. Get your finger out because, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he got me in and he listed the things. He went, you know, good at this, you know, good at this, you know, good at this, you know, good at this. Six things he listed. And I went, well, you might as well drop me. And he dropped me. So he dropped me for one game. They got beat and he put me back in again. So it was fine. But I really love Malcolm. He was top draw. Love him. Still see him now. They're doing a lunch for him, Fulham, in honour of the years when he was manager. So I'm looking forward to seeing him soon again. Great man. Really lovely man.
Says he also says, Tony, now he missed out on promotion to the first division during the 82-83 season with Fulham finishing fourth place and a single point behind Leicester.
Yeah, that was the last day of the season. The crowd invaded the pitch. We were 1-0 down to Derby. Leicester, it was us and Leicester who had that third place to go up. Leicester with Gary Lineker and Alan Smith in their team. But we kind of blew it the last eight games. It was a good footballing team, but as you know then, as you boys will know then, that the pitches sort of got worse as the season progressed. So it was hard to play our football. And then we played that last game at Derby. There was a pitch invasion and the referee blew up for a free kick. They all came on the pitch thinking it was the end of the game. And in fact, there was 4 minutes left. That 4 minutes never got replayed. It was mad. One of the supporters came on and kicked our player. He was running down the line. Robert Wilson beat the fullback. He ran on and acted him over. And it was like, it was nearly all off. Like, they was all ringing the pitches. They come over the barbed wire fences. Because Derby needed a win to stay up. And that was Brian Clough and Peter Taylor at the time. And they needed a win to stay up. We needed a win to go up. So we kind of got bullied in that game, I thought. Young team got bullied by a right experienced and, quite physical Derby County side.
On a very nice baseball ground pitch, I would imagine.
Oh, it was Steve, that you can remember that. That was just a sandpit, wasn't it? It was a sandpit. Trying to move.
About in August, wasn't it? Never known at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah. It was like, Derby County was very long at the start of the season. Then it went muddy in the middle. And then it went bonard at the end. So you had like three seasons in one. Yeah, it was not an easy pitch to play on. You're right.
But you said, you know, you played with George Best, you know, a few times. But, I mean, I always hear conversations now if I'm at work or, you know, if anybody's discussing football, the greatest, et cetera, et cetera. And I always hear Messi's name mentioned. You hear Ronaldo's name mentioned and, you know, every now and again, Pelé's name. But never Best in amongst that sort of that chat. But for me, from what I've seen, of course, I never saw him play live or anything like that. But from what I've seen, he's far and away the best player that's ever played the game.
It's a big debate, isn't it? Messi, Ronaldo, Pele, you know, Johan Cruyff, you know, Maradona. It's sort of all through the eras, but Besti would be in that category for me. very difficult to say who would be the best, but I don't think he'd be far behind anyone, that's for sure. I only played 8 games with him, but I was there a season and a half because I was an apprentice. And, you know, it's just a genius. Like, you know, I play football and watch football all my life. You know, well, I'm 62 now, so been doing it since 16. In different, you know, different leagues and even non-league, which we'll talk about later. But I have some of the stuff he done with a football. And then if you think about it in training, what he used to do, like obviously when there's no one watching, just you kids, you know, and thinking that, you know, he used to turn up late for training, you know, because he had a few problems with ladies and drink. But he used to come back late for training, and we used to train in Bishop's Park. So there's 4 apprentices. We'd be doing our chores. He'd come back and we was out in the park playing football, you know, and there was all dogs poo on the pitch and jumpers for goalposts, but we're out in the park, Bishop's Park, ladies pushing prams about with Georgie Best out there having a training session. And at the time we thought, oh no, we've got to go out again, we're knackered. But who would moan now thinking that you were out with one of the best players in the world, you know, even if he was hanging a bit from the night before.
I had the greatest thing I ever did was I played against George Best once, 1986. He was playing for Ron Atkinson's All Stars against a Ketchin team. He brought an All Stars team to Ketchin Town for a charity game. 2,500 there was there that day. It was great. And I was playing right back and I was marking George Best. So you can imagine, he brought 2 minders and 3 girls with him that day.
And that's what made you lose your hair, was it, Steve? You had to pull in your hair.
That's fantastic. just to have that sort of in your head that you've played against that quality of player was fantastic for me personally, anyway.
But I'd imagine that you got a few quid for that game at the football club, because wherever he went, the crowds came. You know,
well, so this was for charity. We had 2,500 that afternoon. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and that's what he used to do, you know, with Big Ron. He would have turned up for that one, but he used to play a load of those things on a Sunday, even when he was playing professional football. You know, everybody wanted a slice of him. Yeah. And to be fair to him, most of these charity things, he was there all the time. I keep seeing pictures of Bestie on a Sunday afternoon playing with, like, you know, non-league players or Sunday morning footballers. And everybody, even yourself, Steve, you know, that's a claim to fame. I'm talking about, I played with him, you know, 8 times. Yeah. You played against him once.
Yeah.
We wouldn't stop talking about it, would we?
No, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
He says in 1984, Tony completed a £200,000 transfer to West Ham United and went on to make 300 league appearances over a decade. How much would Tony Gale be worth now?
About 100 grand a week. I could help out the non-league, couldn't I, Steve? I could sponsor it and everything. I sponsor it every week for you. Yeah. God, can you imagine earning the money that they do now? And, you know, the way I love non-league football, I'd definitely shovel part of my wages into non-league and say, like, this would be a help. There should be a way, like, the tax man doing that for maybe professional footballers, that a part of their wage didn't get taxed and it went, bosh, over to the non-league or something like that. Because I'm sure, you know, like, they can't be that greedy that they all need 100, 200 grand a week, you know. A couple of grand a week from everyone. It's not a lot, is it, really, like, in the grand scheme of things? Mm. No, but 84, off to West Ham, as you said, Dave, set by an independent tribunal, because I was one of the first ones whose contract had run out. And then it goes to an independent tribunal. So I think Fulham was demanding £1 million. But unfortunately, didn't really offer me a rise, which they forgot to do in the rules. So West Ham kind of got me on the cheap at 200, because I think about 3 years previous, Brighton, who was in the first division then, had made a 600 grand bid and that got knocked back. And then when I was 18, Liverpool came in for me and they knocked that back as well. So West Ham got me on the cheap. Yeah.
So I mean, since you had a formidable partnership with Albie Martin.
Yeah, great player to play with. Very easy to form a relationship, because he was a good footballer. He was like myself. We both used to like bringing the ball out the back. So Alvin was more dominant than me. He was a, more of a centre-back, whereas I used to play drop-off behind him, so to speak. Not sweeper. We played alongside each other, but he liked to, you know, contest the first ball up, so to speak, and I would pick up the remains. But, yeah, we had a good partnership on and off for 10 years because Alvin suffered with a few injuries. But, you know, when in the games that we played together, I think West Ham achieved all their good results when we were playing together.
And do you know, you according to this, and again, I don't know if it's true, it's all Wikipedia, but it's saying that you've got a famous, other than being sort of Tony Gow and being famous that side of it, you've also in this Guinness Book of Records, do you know what for? 1991, and a certain gentleman called Gary Crosby.
Oh, yeah, I'll get sent off, yeah. Yeah, get sent. Oh, cheers, Dave, yeah. What are you, on the referees panel or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, got sent off 1991. It was one of the first, I don't remember the ruling then. It was not professional foul, but you being last man, so to speak. Rule came out on the Thursday, FA Cup semi-final on the Sunday, and Keith Hackett sent me off. But to this day, I'm convinced he'd just done it just to, you know, be the first man to implement the rule, which was absolutely ridiculous, you know. And everybody said it was a crap sending off. I mean, I played 720 games. I was booked 7 times, and that was the only time I was sent off. So I was hardly a hatchet man. Or I was a hacket man, not an hatchet man, yeah. But, he sent me off. Had me marching orders. Now, the other... I thought when you said the Guinness Book of Records, I'm only one of 16 players in the history of football to have played over 300 games for 2 teams. So if you look at from the Premier League down to the fourth division in the history of football, or first division down to the fourth division, there's only 16 players, I think, who's played over 300 games for 2 teams. Yeah, there's another one for you, Dave. Should have done your own work, shouldn't you?
And it's a third one. It's a third one for you because you told me this as well. Of course, when you made your debut for West Ham, who was it you took over from again?
Bobby Moore. Yeah. Well, not actually. Took over from Bonzo because Moro had gone, obviously, to Fulham a few seasons before. But obviously, following Moro all over the place, wasn't it? Like Bobby, Fulham, Bobby, West Ham. And then after football, Capital Gold Radio, where he was partner with Jonathan Pearce, and then I became partner with Jonathan Pearce, Com and Co-Com. But quite a hard task following in that man's footsteps. But you know, every time I met him, he was a gentleman.
So, I mean, what was your most, you know, memorable sort of games and that, you know, for West Ham?
In that season in 85-86, we missed the title on the last day. Liverpool beat us on the last Saturday to the title. Kenny Dalglish, who later became my manager, he was first year's player manager as Liverpool. And I don't know if you remember, they played at Chelsea and they won 1-0. Kenny got the winning goal, Cheston volley into the far corner. And that beat us on the last Saturday of the season. So we had a great run at it. You know, that West Ham team was probably better than the Blackburn team that I played in that won the league. It was a great team to watch. Really good, creative football. Some super players all around the park. And the next season, we had a good few injuries and couldn't cope, really. But for that season, we had a good season. I think you could name the 13 players. Just, it was like that, you know, that hardly... I played all the games, all the 42 league games, all the cup games, all the League Cup, FA Cup, and I think Field Parks did, Mark Wall did, and everybody else you'll find played about 38, 40. So it hardly ever changed the team. And that's what I find now when the players say they're tired, and I go, what a load of cobblers that is. You know, try and play like we did. We had a freeze-off in the mid-season, and we were playing Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, you know, towards the end. And we weren't moaning. And we actually got our best results because when the games come up and you're winning, it's terrific, isn't it? You only get tired when you're losing.
Yeah. Mm. Was that John Lyle who signed you or Ron Greenwood?
No, you're right, Steve. It was John Lyle. Ron Greenwood had gone by then. So John was the best manager I played on in my career because John ran everything from the football club at the bottom right up to the top. And he knew everyone's mum and dad's names, their kids' names, everything. Just so personable. But above all, like a proper man's man, didn't stand any crap or anything like that, but a really great football coach, all based on attacking play.
I'm interested to hear then, you know, got to 93 and then you moved on 94 to Blackburn. I mean, what was that like going there? Was that was the money there then? You know, the money come into the club at say with Jack or was
it had. They finished second the season before in the Premier League, hadn't they? At Man United, they finished runners up. And Kevin Moran had just retired, the old Man United centre half. So basically, it was a young squad at Blackburn who needed some experience in it. I'd finished, West Ham didn't offer me a contract after saying they were going to. They were going to give me a 2-year contract. But on my testimonial day, the last game I played for West Ham, and the Sunday after the Saturday, my testimonial day against Republic of Ireland, they said they weren't going to give me a contract. So it left me a bit in sort of shit street, you know. So I then had to think, what am I doing now? So I was training all summer, hanging on. Could have gone to Japan, could have gone to America, because I was 34 years of age. And then 2 weeks before the season started, got a phone call from Ray Harford, who, funny enough, was my manager and coach at Fulham, and Kenny Dalglish. Could I come down, play at Parkhead against Celtic? 2 weeks before the season started, I was fit because I was training with other clubs. I went down to Celtic, played against Celtic, and they said, right, we need an experienced man about, someone alongside Colin Hendry. And we had a young Ian Pearce at the time to try and bring him along. And then my first game, my debut, was in the Charity Shield. So I hadn't played at Wembley. I missed out at West Ham, 3 semi-finals, 2 League Cups and 1 FA Cup, the sending off, which you mentioned, Dave. And then ended up playing at Wembley in my first game, Charity Shield. Yeah, we lost 2-0. Man United, it was Man United, yeah. Who ran us so close for the title that season.
And I mean, it says he made 15 appearances in the 94-95 Premier League winning campaign. I mean, what was that like, though? You know, playing in there, as you say, helping out maybe some of the youngsters and being that sort of older pro in that team to sort of help them through.
Yeah, I played right up to New Year's Day, I think. That was my last game. And then there was other clubs who come in for me. Middlesbrough, Brian Robson was manager then. They came in and a couple of other clubs. And reportedly, West Ham had come back in for me, which was crazy considering that they let me go, but they'd had injury problems. But Kenny said, I'd like you to stay. He said, you won't be playing really in the second half of the season unless we get a few injuries, but I want you to stay. I want you to be at every game. I want you to help out the coaching on the training field with Ray Harford and sort of help out the younger lads and be in and around the squad for every game because they needed those senior type people around. So now that was brilliant. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So I had a chance of going, but thankfully I stayed and, you know, got that medal that you're talking about. I think I played 20 games with the Cups. Yeah.
So what was that like that final day though? Because, I mean, we saw it on the TV the final day and, because it went really down, right down to the wire. I mean, what was that like, sitting on the bench down there or sitting in the, you know?
Yeah, I was sitting there right behind Kenny. And I had the monitor to the side and I was watching the West Ham game because they were playing Man United. And obviously, it's all my mates, the West Ham team. I rung them up in the week and said, like, come on, you've got to do us a favour here. And I think they was all in Spain the week before because they knew they survived already. And they was like, oh, good luck on that. So we're all in Spain. I thought, oh, lovely, you know. So we had to beat Liverpool. Turns out they came back from Spain and they was all relaxed. And my pal Ludo McClosco, as he quite often tells me when I meet up with him, won me a Premier League medal. He says, I won you that Premier League medal. He had a blinder against Man United. Absolute blinder. They couldn't score past him. And they drew the game, which was enough for us. Yeah.
What was it like playing with Alan Shearer back then?
Oh, Alan was our top player. People say about the best players you played with. I always say, just go by the clubs I was at. Fulham was Georgie Best. West Ham was Alan Devonshire, who Dave knows from non-league. And Blackburn was Alan Shearer. 3 totally different players, but three great players. No, Shearer's, he's top man now. He was... only 23 at the time when he won the league, but he'd also had a comeback from a cruciate injury, which people forget. He had a young age. It sort of stopped his pace a bit, and he remodified his game. He's top draw, you know, right, proper centre half, proper geezer. You know, you could see the fear in the tunnels when you were lining up alongside teams. You know, even the likes of Pallister and Bruce who had to play against him, you could see that they're looking at him trying to get his eye, like as if to, you know, try and ease up on it. But no, he wouldn't have any of it. Physical, skillful, great in the air, powerhouse of a right foot, and not bad with his left either.
I mean, one of the things I remember with Shearer playing for Blackburn, I'm not sure if that was the Championships winning season or not, but it was a game against Arsenal, and I remember him running down and going shoulder to shoulder with Lee Dixon and putting Dixon in the crowd. And I still remember it, and you think to yourself, you know, would they have got away with that with VAR and all that this time round? Do you know what I mean? I think he put him in row Z. I think he just knocked him flat in the crowd.
He was great. I mean, he was physical. He weren't dirty. Alan weren't dirty, but you know, when you do get shoulder to shoulder with people, it is all about the timing. And he had perfect timing that you think you could go and get it. So as you would stretch for it, obviously your body's not taut and tight, is it, for the leaning into. And Alan would just show you a little bit of the ball and then lean into you and boom, you would go flying, you know. He was so strong, so strong. He weren't that tall, but he was really good in the air. He was the only one, I've seen people do it, but regularly do it. He could shape his headers. He could put curl on his headers. So if it was coming in from that way, he'd head against the spin, or coming in from that way, head against the spin, and you could get a curl on it. And you see it every day in training. It weren't a fluke. You know, that requires perfect timing. Used to jump a fraction of a second earlier than, say, me, the centre-back. And as you jumped, it's rather like a rugby line-out, where you get that elevation off someone else jumping a little bit earlier, and he would hang and bang. Oh. Honestly, terrific header of a ball.
I mean, from there, you went on to Palace, and then on to Maidenhead as well. And I mean, but how did you, you know, going into sort of non-league, how did you sort of get to the situation where we are today? You know, with Walton Casuals. I mean, how did that sort of all come about?
Well, Palace, I played three games because I signed with a broken ankle, so I couldn't play. So Maidenhead, I played for 15 months with Alan. That's what gave me the non-league bug, played with Alan. And in the meantime, I was sort of doing a career in radio, doing the midweek games with Capital Gold. And then in the end, I said, right, I've had enough. I'm going to go full-time in radio when I was 38. But Maidenhead, honestly, we won our first cup. I can't remember what cup it was called, Barks and Burks or something like that. But they hadn't won a trophy for 8 years. And we brought them a trophy that Alan was manager, and he's still my best pal in football, Dev. And I was player coach. Oh, I loved it. And because he said, come down and play. And I thought, oh no, I know it's going to happen. I've been pro all my life. People are going to kick lumps out of me and all that. But it weren't. It was like, you know, someone knocked me over and I was, oh, sorry, Tony. You know, like, there's a total respect for a pro that had come out the top level in a non-league. Total respect. And that's what you love about non-league. And afterwards, training, game, you'd come in and have a pint, which I loved. You know, it was a bit old-fashioned. It was a bit like how I started off in football, really. And then, of course, my cousin, after that, was playing for Walton Casuals. And then he started managing and then asked me to come and help. So I was coaching them in midweeks, going to games when I weren't doing Capital Gold stuff. And we got on promotion out of the Combined Counties. And my boy was playing in the team as well. So my cousin managing it, my boy planning it, and me sort of assistant manager, really, you know, helping him along in his early managerial career. Anthony went on to play the record amount of games for Walton Casuals alongside Craig Lewington, who's Ray Lewington's son, and then became manager and I was always involved as, they called me director of football, but I was really chairman. But it weren't till chairman till about 8 years ago, I think. But basically all that means, you'll know, Steve, Dave, is basically you're lumbered with raising all the money. That's what chairman means. You've got to go and do all the functions. You've got to make sure that the players get their expenses or wages at the end of the week. You've got to make sure that the pitch is done. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. And gradually it gets more and more. But thankfully now I've got a good, great board of directors with me, about five or six really good friends, and we share it all. It's we're a well-run club, well-run club.
You said earlier there, Tony, about how much you enjoyed it when you were playing at Maidenhead. Don't you think it's a shame that these days more ex-pros, top pros, don't come down and play, you know, at the end of their careers, like they used to do?
Yeah, I don't think they've got the love of the game like we probably had. You know, I could have played on till I was well in my 40s, but I had the opportunity of going full-time on the radio with Jonathan Pierce and travelling the world and going to the France World Cup at the time, you know, the one, the French one, when they beat Brazil in the final. So, but no, you're right, Steve. It's a shame because that small amount of time I played with George Best and Bobby Moore, I learned a lot. I'd like to think that small amount of time I played at Maidenhead influenced a lot of those young players. Yeah. And maybe if they went on to become managers, some of the things that they learned off Dev and myself at the time, you know, sinks in. You know, it doesn't always sink into the non-league brain because it's not, and I don't mean that detrimentally, by the way, it's just that we've done it all our lives and we've done it every single day, whereas non-league is Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So there's only a certain amount of information that I found when I was coaching that they could take on board, because you ain't got the time to implement all that like a pro club. So that's what me and Dev learned quickly, like not too much information, you know, just enough. And that's what I say to Anthony as well. Not too much information, just a little bit at a time, little bit at a time. Otherwise, you know, the boys have got to go to work, haven't they, all week. So they're only thinking about their football Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. But I love it. Not many players I've come across in non-league don't give their all. It's an honest game, honest game.
I've often said, and I've written it as well, the fact that how much easier it is to actually manage at pro level than it is at non-league level, where at pro level they've got all the things, all the technology, all the staff behind them that they can use, where at our level, and certainly at my level and a little bit higher, we've got nothing. Like you say, all we've got is a couple of hours on a Tuesday, perhaps on a Thursday, and then a game. With no technology, you can't go around watching games, you can't see the TV games. It's so much easier, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting better, though, because, you know, like YouTube would know more than me, but, you know, we film our games now, and we've got a staff, backroom staff, like Anthony's implemented that within there. We've got people, and we have interns in as well, helping with physiotherapy. There's not, you know, we got an academy at our club as well. Not only is it like you're giving something back with a football, but you're giving something back with physios, managers, coaches, analysts. They're all able to do this. And as I explained to the kids in the academy, it's not all about being a pro footballer. There are so many jobs in professional football now. If you don't make it as a pro, you could still work, you know, that West Ham staff, you know, my club and Fulham, they've probably got 100 strong behind the scenes. It's ridiculous. You're right, Steve. I mean, basically, we're social workers, aren't we? You know, that's what we are. You know, we look after all their problems and everything like that. Mate, you wouldn't want it any other way, would you? It's that divide between Sunday football to pro football, and then you're in the middle with non-league football. But the standards in non-league football are good, you know. And if I've got a night off, I'll pop round the corner. I'm in Billericay now. I'll go round and probably watch Billericay at night against St Albans, you know. And I'll go and watch Chelmsford. I had a Saturday off for a change, no commentary game. So I went to watch Chelmsford at the weekend against Eastbourne because we didn't have a game, Walton Casuals. But yeah, you become like Dave. You become a footballaholic, didn't you, mate? We become geeks.
But so knowing what you're like, you know, we've you know, really sort of like helping as many people as you possibly can. You know, such a love. You know, as I said to you before at the very beginning, such a lovely guy. Did you actually you know, give your wisdom to those kids in the academy? I mean, I would assume you do, and you go, you know, go and speak to them, you know, a bit of pearls of wisdom. If you, you know, maybe if there's one there that might be, you know, maybe not doing what they could be doing, should we say, or whatever else, or having a few issues here or there. Is it like a little quiet word from yourself that sort of puts them on the right path or shows them how to do it, and arm around the shoulder type thing?
Yeah, is it? I mean, there's not enough hours in the day to get there every day. And, you know, I visit it a couple of times a month. But you just to see, like, smiles on faces, really. I mean, a lot of these kids are not going to get in our non-league team, let alone pro teams. But what they're doing is, and you'll appreciate this as well, they're getting an education. They're getting an education and then 2 hours every day to play football. Now, they might be crap at it or they might be good at football. But what we're giving them is an environment where they can... you know, do their BTEC level, which I would have done, actually. I wasn't the brightest in school. So I would have gone to an academy, done me BTECs, and then 2 hours every day, boom, I'm out on the training field. I'm having a run about and having a kick about with mates. And then in an organised league, the academy league that we play in. So when you go down there, and you know, we get kids travelling from East London over to us, you know, every morning. I mean, that is a commitment. That is a commitment. And like when you see... You go down there and their face lights up. I mean, we had the Deputy Prime Minister come down there a couple of months ago, Dominic Raab. He came down. He couldn't believe it, you know, the kids. I'm not just talking about boys. I'm talking about girls, young girls playing in the academy as well. So it's not just about the first team, is it? A football club is not just about the first team. It's about, you know, you boys do it. You're giving something back, aren't you? You know, and I had mentors... in my football career, that I never forgot, a guy passed away about a year ago, and I spoke, done the eulogy at his funeral. Guy you wouldn't know, but he helped me at boys club level. And he probably told me as much as I got out of pro clubs, and he was the one that I could think about. Now, if one of those kids thought that about me, you know, I'd die a happy man. Not I've helped someone, you know, someone who might have been on doing something wrong. They're playing football and they're doing this, that and the other. And that's what this guy did. When we went to that funeral, there must have been 25 ex-players from the boys club and we're all nearly 60. Mm. And he's helped them down the line. And you didn't know how much he helped them until we went to that funeral. How we helped them out with a few quid, maybe some had problems with parents or things like that. But people like that just don't come along in life so much. So if I'm half... or quarter of the man that he was, Teddy Weston, I'll give him a mention, then I'll be happy. Yeah.
I think there is, you know, there's, I mean, Steve, one thing that sort of, it always stick in my head, and you know, anybody sort of mentions you, Tony, I always sort of say this story to him, you know, about it. And I said, it's one of those things you'd be, you know, we've been doing that radio show with Keith now for sort of 10 years or so. And I remember one day we did a show and, I'm outside and for some reason I'd got the day off the following day, which wasn't normally the case then. And I was outside just washing up and all of a sudden my phone starts ringing. And of course, as these new iPhones do, they mention who it is who's on the phone. And, you know, the phone's telling me that Tony Gale's calling me. And I'm thinking, what? What is Tony Gale doing calling me? Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I picked the phone.
You told me to, Dave. You told me. You said, bring me up at 12 o'clock and I'm going to be with four mates, you told me.
and I remember it because I picked the phone up and you just said, hello, Dave. I just thought I'd give you a call to tell you what a fantastic show you had last night. And to you, that might just be a simple phone call. But to me, in the 10 years that I've been doing that show, that was the biggest, how can I put that? I don't know, inspirational moment in the 10 years I've done that show. For somebody like yourself, just to call me and just say what a fantastic show that was last night, you know,
it was. And when you enjoy something like you and Keith are doing, and you're talking football as we're doing with Steve as well here now, it's nice, isn't it? And then if you get a little bit of feedback off the guys who listen to your show with Keithy, I mean, it was terrific. I mean, you and him like a mine of information about non-league, and you know, I can learn as well. So. Told you I saw Keith recently, didn't I? And he's still, you know, Keith is a lovely geezer, isn't he? You know, he's been managing and all that. And he's, they're just nice. I mean, yourself, you're just nice guys, aren't you? And you're just what I call proper football people. Yeah. proper football bit. So what time do you want me to ring you tomorrow, Dave?
just something I meant to ask you earlier when we were talking about your playing career, Tony. I saw you play a lot of times, but I saw you live once at Cardiff in Kettering, and I saw you live playing at Leicester once, but I saw you on TV a lot. But I was a centre-back myself, so I always look at centre-backs, defenders, as more than anything, really. And I was surprised that you didn't gain more international recognition. What did you feel about that?
Yeah, I thought I was good enough. My mum and dad definitely thought I was good enough. But I think if that I'd be more suited to today's game, because I was more of a footballing centre-back than, like the Terry Butcher, Alvin, Steve Foster, that type of guy.
Rio Ferdinand.
But I'd be like, I see sort of like Rio or maybe a John Stones nowadays, you know, like where you're comfortable on the ball. And that's what, who did I see the other day? I saw Ozzy Ardiles, and we had a game of golf a couple of months ago, and he said, you'd have been good in today's football. I said to Ozzy, you wouldn't have been bad either. Cool, right, man. Ozzy Ardiles, but Ozzy said, defenders have a lot of the ball nowadays. And when we had the ball rolled out to us, it was normally on a sandpit or a mud thing, but you still like to try and play football. That would be my reasoning, Steve, that I probably didn't get the international recognition. But, it doesn't give me the ump. I'd rather be, remembered that I was a footballing player, really, rather than a traditional centre-back.
With Wharton Casuals, though, Tan, what's been your highlight so far of your chairmanship? I know you've got promotion in that time as well, but, has that been your highlight, or has there been certain games or...?
Well, a couple of promotions, really, Dave. Out of Combine Counties and then up through the Rymans and then absolutely being gutted. I don't mean this disrespectfully to the Southern League, Steve, but the journeys we have to make, because we was right on the border. So, if we'd have gone into the other one, the Isthmian League, then it would have been a lot easier for us with more local games. But ourselves and Met Police got a little bit of a raw deal when it was the restructuring. We appealed against it. We had to go up to Wembley to appeal against it. But, unfortunately, we were two of the clubs that were right on the borderline, and that was it. When you think, the league we're in, it probably costs us bloody 10 grand a year on, travel coaches, which it just knocks the cobblers out of you, doesn't it? You're raising functions at those, and it's going to go on coach travel when it's just not right in my eyes. But I understand they had a problem, and that's the way it went. But the highlights had to be the promotions. And this year, we've had our best ever season, I think. I think we got 50 points on the board already. We're 11th. Normally, we're a little bit lower than that because we kind of punch above our weight budgetary-wise and all that. But we're 11th and 50 points. And I think, what I'm proud of the fact is, and Anthony and the boys, the results they got, we beat Hayes and Yedin three times this season. Right. And they're top of the league. We beat them home and away. And in the cup. And the Hayes and Yedin guys, as Anthony told me, were all very complimentary about us. And, we're good in the Fair Play League. We're good in the Fair Play League in the dugout as well. So we're like a club that's a proper club now. It's taken quite some time, but, we're going to games against big teams, like Truros and Tivertons and Tauntons and Westerns. And you feel like you're going to, you've got a chance of winning the game. Might go either way, but you feel like a chance of got winning. Instead of like in previous years, you think, oh, we've got our work cut out there. But we've come a long way. I don't want to let it slip now, but we've come a long way.
And you got Mr. Courage visiting you at the weekend?
Yeah, Steve's coming down. We went there earlier in the season. We were the better team. He'll admit that as well. And we got beat 2-1. I think it was on a Tuesday night down there. But that's a lovely ground. Nice people down there at Salisbury. And Steve does a good job down there. We're talking about pro people. Steve's come out of the pro game and he's putting his life and soul into non-league football, isn't he? With the managing, and I think he runs the academy there. I'm not sure. I think he runs the academy there as well. So they're not having the best of seasons this season. But I think like everyone after that pandemic, they kind of overstretched themselves. and now they're realising they're cutting back as the season's gone on. You know what I mean? So I think they're in that little transition period. So I wish them well.
And you got a nice little trip coming up soon as well down to Plymouth.
Down to Truro, yeah. I mean, I might swerve that one, Dave, yeah. That'd have gone a few quid in my dad's cab, wouldn't it? Would have gone about 500 quid.
This plane at Plymouth, you haven't got quite as far to go as you would have gone to if you went to Truro.
Yeah, I do believe it's a bit closer, Steve, isn't it? But it's it was even a long way when I played at Plymouth a couple of times. And yeah, that is a long way down there. But no, they're a big team, aren't they? I mean, okay, look, I ain't moaning about it because we're in the league that we're in. But the lads will love playing at Truro because they came to us this season. I think they're the best footballing team we played, but they're not right up there at the moment. Difficult to understand why. But they're not up there at the moment, but I'm sure they might come with a late run.
I mean, when you do your commentaries and stuff and that for radio and TV, and I mean, are you and Morton Casuals are playing? Are you keeping a close eye on it like you used to see Gary Neville do for Salford and stuff like that? I mean, are you sort of keeping a real sort of close eye on it, or are you trying to concentrate on what you're doing in front of you?
I'm concentrating, but I've got a goal alert on my phone. Yeah, like so. And sometimes I think when it's like you're doing a 3 o'clock kickoff, you just started your game. And then you see your phone go and you think, oh, no, we ain't got one down, have we? Oh, God. Only 2 poxy minutes ago, like, you know what I mean? And, like, you press your phone, you have a look, and then one of my directors, Duncan, oh, one up, great goal. Like, you know, someone scored a goal, like, blah, blah, blah. And you think, oh, your commentary picks up for a little while, doesn't it? You know, but you go one down and he's like, oh, here we go. No, I try not to look at it, actually. I'm so superstitious. So I try and not look at my phone till bang on 22 and a half minutes in the game, then I'll have a look at the score update. And then at half time, and then I'll ring up Duncan for a half time report. And then 22 and a half minutes into the second half, and then at the end. And if I miss it, because I'm commentating on mine, I think, oh no, I've gone past 22 and a half minutes. We're going to be down. We ain't going to be up. It's like, it's one of them, you know. No, I love it. So, and the directors all give me a little update. And then straight after that, I'm down in the car after where I've been commentating. I'm on the phone to Anthony because he's my, you know, got to report into the chairman, ain't you, boys? You know, got to report to the chairman. You got to explain yourself.
So
you've got a 3G pitch at Walton Casuals. How's that work for you?
Yeah, love it. Love it. Non-league football is the way ahead. It's the way ahead. I mean, absolutely. We play on some crap pitches. Absolute crap. At least it's consistent all the way through the season. And what it does is it encourages a passing game, which we like to play and Anthony encourages. So I love it. I wouldn't say at a league level because you've got the money then to, you know, implement like a Desu pitch, which is like a 4G or 3G pitch anyway, because they're so good. But at non-league level, yes, it's a yes. And anybody who moans about them pitches can't play football. Yeah. You know, you can't play. If you can't play on a all-weather pitch, you can't play at all. You know,
they're also good for income as well, aren't they? Because you can hire it out and whatever. So
yeah, they are, Steve. But we're a council-owned, so we rent. You know, we rent off the council, and the council are really good with us, Elmbridge Borough Council. But no, it is the way ahead. If you've got your own ground, obviously, and you know, you can have kids on it before the game, kids on it at halftime, kids afterwards, and that's what non-league football is. Instead of, you know, get out of goal area. Don't go over there. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know, it's one of them, isn't it? So, yeah, I'd encourage it. You know, you see loads of, you know, if I go to National League, I go and watch Alan's Dev's team. They're playing on good pitches. I went to watch him at Dagenham the other day. It's a lovely, lovely pitch. But then you go and watch him on another pitch and you don't see any football. It's a little bit like sometimes when we used to have to play on there. But I like to see good football. And I think that the 3 and 4G pitches are, encourage that.
I suppose for Walton fans, I mean, what is the aim for you and your boy for the rest of the season? I mean, where are you looking to finish? I mean, you say you're having one of the best seasons, you know, where you are in 11th. I mean, are you looking for a top 10? Are you looking for playoffs?
I think it might be a bit too late for playoffs, Dave. Although we want to win every game. If I finish 11th, I want to finish 10th. I want to finish 9th, 8th. You know, I've told him, like, you know, we don't give up. And especially like other teams have got a lot to play for in terms of down the bottom and at the top, it's unfair. Mm. So no, we keep the same budget all the way through. We don't drop the budget or raise the budget or whatever according to like other clubs, you know, because that's not fair on other teams. So we like to play it fair and we want to win every single game. We've got some really good games coming up, you know, Salisbury being the first one on Saturday, Truro you mentioned, we've got some good games. But we've beaten Met Police in the league, we've beaten Aizen Yedin in the league, we beat Gosport in the league, we beat all the top teams, or given them a good game. So that's where we're at now. So next year, hopefully, you know, we want to be a little bit better than that and challenging the playoffs. Every time we've got to get near them playoffs, we've had an indifferent result. We've got to get a little bit more consistency to our game. But we're nearly there.
I suppose it'd be wrong of me just before we finish to ask you about your two of your teams. I mean, one, do you think Fulham are going to make it into the Premier League next year? And two, you know, West Ham, are they going to make top four? And I suppose, more importantly, are they going to keep hold of all of their better players in the likes of Mr. Rice and so on?
Yeah, Fulham, definitely. Premier League, without a doubt. And such a great future to look forward to. I don't know if you two are aware, but they're going to have the best stand in the Premier League overlooking the river. That will be open next season, the bottom tier. The top tier is to follow and the shell underneath. And it's one of the few Premier League grounds that you'll be able to arrive by boat because it'll have its own pier. How nice is that? Okay. There might be a few boats sunk down the river by away fans, but it'd be and West Ham fans go down there. You can imagine, can't you? It'd be like Dunkirk, wouldn't it? But that'd be great. I'm looking forward to Fulham back in the Premier League. What a club that is. What a lovely club that is. And West Ham, massive game Thursday, where they've got Sevilla, second leg of the Europa Cup. They're one down. And if they win that, they can get into the quarterfinals, which would be brilliant for them. So they've had a great season. Moyes has done brilliant with them, as does Marco Silva, as with Fulham. So I'm so pleased. And that's always great for me when those two teams play in the Premier League. They play against each other. Like I call it the Tony Gale derby, you know, or it was the Bobby Moore derby before Bobby passed away because he was West Ham and Fulham. But with my links with the two of them, I love that game. And the fans that... They got that special bond because they played in the 75 Cup final when Mauro played for Fulham against West Ham. And they seem to have had that bond and there's never any trouble at the games and really good games of football. So two fixtures, home and away, I'm really looking forward to. And then hopefully in about 8 years' time, Walton Casuals are playing in the Premier League. That's the eight-year plan. What do you reckon, Dave, Steve? Eight-year plan?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. I mean, do you worry though, as a West Ham fan, if they don't make it in top four, they don't, you know, win the Europa Cup, that, you know, that's what sort of opens the doors for the likes of some of the better players there, especially sort of Declan, you know, to sort of exit stage left? Or do you think that they will stay in there because of how good of a season they've had this year and pushing for that Champions League place?
I think we'll get another season out of Dec. Yeah, you know, my son. Trained Deck at Chelsea when he was in the academy and still speaks to him regular and like coaches him in the summer with one-on-ones when Deck likes to keep fit. So got a little bit of a link. I think he'll stay another season. Him and Jared Bowen are West Ham's two jewels in the crown, really. So they've got to look to keep them. And Mitrovic, probably for Fulham, is their jewel in the crown that they've got to keep. And he's got to prove himself in the Premier League. But I think for West Ham, it's a great season. I think they're fifth at the moment. If they can end up in the top six again, then what a season they've had. And what a job he's done with a limited squad. Only one centre-forward on the books, and he ain't a real one. Antonio, he's a converted centre-forward. So Moisey has done an incredible job down there. You know, West Ham fans love him at the moment.
It just shows you what Manchester United missed.
Yeah, because he wasn't given time, Dave, was he? And he was obviously following Fergie, which was probably the most difficult job in the world. But I don't think anyone's done any better than David since they followed since then, have they? It was a difficult job. It was an end of an era. Sir Alex got out at the right time. Reputation intact and a wonderful man and a great football man. But it's really difficult for people after that, isn't it?
Absolutely. Tony, listen, time's run away from us. I'm really, you know, thankful for you to coming on today. As I said, an absolute superstar and legend, and somebody that, you know, I see as one of my football heroes. And I thank you very, very much for doing what you've done for us here today, and wish you and Walton Casuals all the best for the rest of the season.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. And thanks, Dave. And I'll give you a call at 12 o'clock tomorrow, mate.
Magic. Great stuff.
Every day I ring you at 12 o'clock. Steve, it's just to wake him up. He's in bed. See you later, boys.
Bye.
Good luck to the pair of you. Good luck, Steve.
Cheers. And to you. Bye.
We'll play you one day, hopefully. Not us coming down, you coming up. See you later.
Yeah. Thanks.